19. Underhull was a smear of ruby light 20 kilometers under their feet. With the helmet binocs cranked up to full zoom, Svetlana could just make out the figures, tractors, and temporary support domes of the little outpost. They were really no safer down there, not if one took the long view. But in that moment she would have given everything not to be up here, standing on the wrong side of the iron sky. She wondered how her partner felt. It was Shrope who would be taking the long stroll into the alien ship, not her. "Let me be your envoy," he had said. He'd shown no sign of it, but she wondered if he was regretting those words now. Parry's voice buzzed in her helmet. "Talk to us, boys and girls. We get nervous when we don't hear anything." "We're still here," Svetlana said. "No ill effects?" She looked at Shrope, who shook his head briefly. "We're both doing okay. It's no different up here than down here." She risked a glance up towards the distant structure of the new sky, the inside of the huge shaft in which Janus had come to rest, just a lot more exposed. "I don't think any of us realized how claustrophobic it was getting down there. Ryan says you're both looking good. If you could breathe a bit slower, that would be great." "Just getting over the flex walk," Svetlana said. "Seriously out of practice here. We'll forgive you. Could you do us a favor and pan around?" She unclipped the cam from the side of her helmet and offered Parry a 360 sweep, without dwelling on the spiken ship. Part of her still hoped it would go away, like a psychotic aberration they could all just agree never to mention again. "How's that?" "We're dropping packets now and then, but other than that the images look pretty good. Maybe we should have brought that booster up with us after all." "Nah, not a good idea to have anything up there that they might not recognize as being one of us, or belonging to us." Svetlana nodded. They had been over that, of course, and she saw the logic in keeping the contact situation as clean as possible. But just having a relay box by the lip would have made her feel 1 degree less disconnected from the people below. Almost as soon as the ship had landed, it had extended what could only be interpreted as a boarding ramp. They had hoped to send robots into the ship before they sent a human volunteer, but every time they sent a free flyer or a legged robot anywhere near the alien ship, it pulled up the drawbridge. They were as close now as any of the machines had reached, and the ramp was still down. Presumably the ship recognized that they were armored organisms, not robot envoys. "Craig," Parry said, "we're getting some fuzz from your cam. Could you give it a clout, see if that clears things?" "Just a sec." Svetlana watched Shrope knuckle the side of his orange-painted helmet. Sometimes a well-delivered jolt could separate bonded layers in the gelware of the Belousov-Zabotinsky sandwich, allowing reaction fronts to propagate more freely. Wang had achieved great things, but the BZ tech was still too subtle for his forge vats. "Any better?" Shrope asked. "We'll manage. Audio is good, at least. You still cool about going through with this, Craig?" "Well, cool isn't quite the word I'd have chosen." "It's not too late to back out," Svetlana said. She caught his skeptical look through the faceplate. "One of us has to do this, Svetlana. It might as well be me." "You don't owe us anything," she said. "No," he said, almost too quietly to be picked up by his helmet comm, "but I do owe myself something." Svetlana nodded once, briskly. "We're about to start walking," she told Parry. "Ship looks about a click away, give or take. Should be there in under 20 minutes. "Let's take things nice and slow," Parry said. "Every 20 paces I want you to stop and hold your cams on the ship. We'll review the situation before proceeding closer. Any changes we don't like the look of, we scrub. Clear on that?" "Clear." "No arguments, no heroics," Parry said firmly. "No problem," Svetlana answered. "This is a heroics-free zone." They started walking. After 20 gecko-flex paces, they halted and allowed Parry and the contact team to get a good look at the squatting ship. It sat on the outer surface of the iron sky like a chandelier that had fallen from a ceiling and somehow avoided shattering. It rested on a dozen or more curved arms that angled down to make contact with the ground before rising again to form tapered, nearly horizontal tips. The boarding arm differed from the others by resting flat on the ground all the way to its extremity, which pointed directly at the hole. The arm was flat in profile, except for two wall-like flanges running along its entire length. Svetlana might have had her doubts before, but from this perspective it looked more like a ramp than ever, a clear invitation to step inside. The boarding arm led into a bulbous, onion-shaped core that consisted of many concentric layers of glassy material. Long chains of spike and symbols floated on the outer layer, as if drawn in neon. Darker structures were dimly visible within, faint as the suggestions of organs in glassfish. Dozens of much thinner arms emerged from the central structure without contacting the ground. Some of them bulged into node-like structures that might have been sensors, or engines, or living quarters, or weapons. Soft light gleamed from the curves and joints, partly refracted from the ambient light of the chamber, but partly emanating from the ship itself. It was very, very large. The central core alone could have swallowed Crabtree from ground to hab. They stopped, advanced, stopped again. "No visible change," Parry said, "but they haven't pulled up the drawbridge either." "Any word on those symbols yet?" Svetlana asked. "Jake and Christine are still working on the correlations. You'll hear the moment they come up with something."
"But don't hold my breath."
"You've got the idea."
Svetlana managed a gallows laugh.
"Maybe we should bring in the symbolists, see what they have to say."
"We're not that desperate," Parry bounced back.
They walked, stopped, walked again. After 10 or 12 minutes, Svetlana judged that they had crossed half the distance to the squatting ship. She glanced back, and the hole in the sky looked foreshortened, difficult to make out against the dark pewter grey of the surrounding undamaged surface. She wondered why the Spikens had been forced to cut the hole, rather than ordering the smart matter of the iron sky to open up like a door. So many questions, so few answers. A few more stops and starts and the ship loomed much larger, beginning to tower over them, its glassy intricacy all the more striking the closer they came. Rather than surrendering its secrets as they neared, the ship only became more bewilderingly complicated to look at.
"Ease up, air hogs," Parry said.
Svetlana nodded, realizing that she had been breathing too heavily again. The slow death march across the other side of the sky was getting to her.
"Comms still okay?"
she asked, just to be saying something. "Thready, but we can live with it. How are you feeling?"
"As if I'm about to feed the fishes, but otherwise I'm holding it together, more or less.
How's Craig doing?" Shrope cut in, "verging on the apprehensive, but I'm holding it together as well." "That's good. Must be a hell of a view out there. I mean, with just a centimeter of helmet glass between you and it."
"You're right," Shrope said,
and suddenly there was a tone in his voice that lifted the hairs on the back of Svetlana's neck. "We shouldn't forget how privileged we are. This is it. What we've been waiting for all these years. Not just for the 13 years we've been stuck on Janus, but all the thousands of years that have passed, the tens of thousands of years even, ever since one of us looked up into the sky, into all that darkness, and wondered what was out there. Not if there was anything there, but what. We've always known they were out here somewhere, and that it was only a matter of time before we met. Well, this is that time. It's here and now, and out of all the billions of people who have ever lived, it's happening to us."
"Amen to that, buddy," Parry said slowly.
"But let's not lose focus on the fact that this is just another job. It's no more or less dangerous than planting a mass driver or firing up a cold tokamak." After another 10 minutes, they had arrived within 20 meters of the tip of the boarding ramp. They panned cams around and waited for word from below.
"Are we still go?" Svetlana asked.
A crackle, then Parry's voice. "If Craig is still happy, we see no reason not to proceed."
"I'm ready," Shrope said.
"Ash says you're good to go on suit systems. Your call, buddy."
"I'll start the walk.
Suggest Svetlana retreats to a midpoint between here and the hole. Shouldn't make much difference to comms."
"I'm staying right here at the foot of the ramp," Svetlana said.
"I appreciate the offer," Shrope said,
"but at the slightest sign of anything happening, I want you to clear out. Remember what Parry said.
No heroics."
She nodded.
"How long are you planning on staying inside?"
"I'm zeroing my suit timer,
and setting the clock for 30 minutes. When the alarm pings, I'll finish my drink and ask for my coat. Svetlana set her own timer for the same duration.
Sounds good. If you're not out after 30 minutes, you forget about me.
Do you honestly think there'd be any point sending in the cavalry?
Not really, she said on a falling note. Good luck, Craig.
I know you and I haven't always seen eye to eye.
Forget about it. That's a lot of water under a lot of bridges.
Shrope reached out and took one of her gloved hands.
Pushing ice, right?
She closed her hand around his.
Pushing ice. All the way home.
Shrope let go and turned to walk the remaining distance to the end of the ramp. Svetlana stood her ground, training her cam on his flex-walking form. At the base of the ramp, he paused and looked back, and then placed one foot onto the nearly horizontal surface.
Keep talking, Craig, Svetlana said.
Traction is good. Bond seems to be about normal. No trouble removing or repositioning. I'm about to place my other foot on the ramp.
Easy does it.
It's done. I'm still standing. I'm on the ship.
Describe the stuff you're standing on, Parry said.
It's like glass, tinted a kind of purple-grey. I can just see the ground through it. Feels solid under me. There's no give. No resilience. No vibration. He unclipped the cam and waved it across the floor.
Getting this?
Check your focus, buddy.
Shrope knocked the cam against his knee pad.
Better?
Better.
Hold it there for a second.
Good.
Now pan left.
Then right.
Svetlana heard Parry break off to discuss something with one of the other watchers.
Okay, you can stow the cam again.
Shrope fiddled the cam back onto its mounting.
I think I'm ready to take another step.
In your own time, Parry said. Svetlana watched him walk another pace along the ramp.
Still looking good here, Shrope said. I'm going to continue. I don't want that alarm going off before I'm inside.
Steady as she goes, Parry said. We're not in a race here.
Shrope continued. 5 paces, then 10, then 20.
By now the ramp under him had begun to curve upwards, away from the floor.
Traction still good, he said.
Take it nice and slowly all the way to the top, Parry said. Shrope stopped after another dozen or so paces. Svetlana heard his breathing. It was harsher and faster than she would have liked, but that was entirely understandable, given the circumstances.
I'm finding it difficult to judge my angle to the floor, he said.
Horizon line looks tilted. I think there might be a field effect here, like at Eddytown.
Copy, Svetlana said. It looks to me as if you're tilting backwards. I can see more of your helmet crown than I ought to be able to.
I don't feel it.
You wouldn't. We already know the Spikens have complete control of gravity on local scales. Be odd if they didn't make the ramp easy to climb.
I'm continuing.
She watched him complete his ascent to the top of the ramp, until his suit was just a smudge of orange against the smoked glass intricacy of the ship's central core. He was leaning at about 20 degrees to Svetlana's local vertical. She saw the tiny movements of his arm as he unclipped the cam again and panned it around, taking in the ship and the wider view. A window on her HUD showed the same feed. Transmission was good most of the time, but now and then packet loss would shatter the image into blocks of static hexels.
Show us the door, Parry said.
Shrope angled the cam around to take in the large aperture where the ramp terminated.
I'm not sure how much sense you're making of the pictures, he said, so I'll try to talk you through it.
The ramp levels out here and feeds into the ship for about 10 meters, passing through a corridor. At least, that's what I'm going to call it. There's a floor, 2 walls and a ceiling. Everything's slightly curved. No single source of illumination, although the whole thing seems to be glowing gently. Can't see much detail in the walls. Again, they're translucent, and there's a hint of more stuff behind them. But even with my naked eye, that's the best I can do.
What's at the end of the ramp? Parry asked.
I can't tell. It bends down into the ship at a pretty steep angle. I guess I'll have to go inside to take a look.
Take it nice and slowly to the end of the flat section, Parry said. Keep filming all the time.
Svetlana's HUD view lurched forward with Shrope's every pace. The glass threw back dull, blurred reflections, as if from a scuffed mirror. Shrope reached up and turned down his helmet light, relying on the ambient illumination.
"You still reading me?"
"We're getting it all," she said. "Packets are a bit erratic, but we should be good for a little while. Could be the ships blocking some of the signal. I've reached the end of the flat section. Looking down now and... okay."
The picture dropped away, then reassembled, hexel by hexel. Shrope had the cam pointed down into the next sloping section of the corridor. Without him in the view, there was no obvious way to tell up from down. It looked as if the corridor curved down and then swung left around a sharp hairpin.
"We're still reading you," Parry said. "I'm stepping onto the sloping section, 1 foot at a time, testing for traction."
He paused, his breath grating in Svetlana's ears.
"Feels secure. About to place a second foot."
Another pause.
"I'm transitioning to a new local vertical. Standing up again."
He gave them a small chuckle.
"Christ, this feels weird."
"You're doing a fantastic job," Svetlana said, trying to sound reassuring. "We're right behind you, Craig."
"I'm going further inside. Pretty straightforward so far."
"Coming up on 10 minutes on the clock," Svetlana said. "You've got 20 left."
"Copy. Sounds like more than enough."
"Keep up the voiceover," Parry said. "We're still getting pictures, but the quality's beginning to deteriorate significantly. We should be good on voice for a while yet."
"I've descended, guessing here, 5 or 6 meters from the flat section, floors curving back to the horizontal again, looking at a left-hand bend ahead of me."
"Any change in texture, illumination?" Svetlana asked.
"Nothing obvious. Maybe a little bit more glow. Could be my imagination, though."
Another voice cut in on the comm.
"Krieg, this is Ash Murray."
"Go ahead, Ash."
"I'm seeing some drift in your trimix."
"Anything to worry about?"
"No, just the usual regulator problem with the softs. Up 0.2 by 2%, please."
Through the HUD window, Svetlana saw Craig's thick-fingered hand tap the revised air mix into his suit sleeve. It was years since he had worn a suit, but he did it with a creditable lack of fuss.
"Copy. Feels better already, Ash."
"Okay, but keep an eye on those trimix levels and self-regulate accordingly. You should see a small histogram in your lower right faceplate HUD. Don't let the red line drop under the white marker."
"The day we get back," Svetlana said caustically, "I'm putting in a letter of complaint to the dickhead who designed these suits."
"The dickhead who designed these suits died about 200 years ago," Ash Murray said. "But I take your point."
"I'm approaching the corner," Shrope said, angling the cam around the bend. "Let's see. Craig?"
"Still here." But his voice had a fractured quality to it. The visual feed had become a series of static images, updating every 2 or 3 seconds.
"I'm moving along another straight section of corridor. Traction still good. Hard to tell, but..."
"Keep talking," Svetlana said.
"Things widen up ahead. There's some kind of spherical opening. I'm going to call it a room."
The visual link improved momentarily, permitting Svetlana a glimpse of the end of the corridor, feeding into a wider space, bathed in the same sourceless spectral light. Then the image crashed back to static frames.
"Keep an eye on those trimix levels," Ash Murray said.
"Roger that. Everything feels okay in here. Wish I'd taken a leak before we left Underhull."
"Ash didn't plumb you in?" Svetlana asked.
"Told him not to. I'm not planning on spending the rest of my week in this thing."
"Visuals are getting scrappy down here," Parry said. "Keep up that commentary, buddy."
"I've reached the opening into the room. The corridor comes out into the side of the spherical chamber. There's no level floor, just one continuous curved surface." He jogged the cam around. "No sign of any other way out, either, although it's tricky to tell with all this glass on glass."
"You mean it's a dead end?" Parry asked.
"Looks that way. I'm going to take a closer look inside, provided I can still grip."
He grunted as he lowered himself over the edge, legs dangling into the spherical space.
"Glove traction feels okay. Should be able to climb out if I have to."
"Keep the cam steady for several seconds at a time,"
Parry said quietly. We're down to still frames here. I'm lowering myself. Hold on a sec. There was a grunt and a wheeze as he completed the movement. Okay, I'm down and standing. The floor material is the same stuff we've seen all the way in. No problem with grip. I'm going to give you a panoramic view of the chamber now. Making an obvious effort to hold the cam as steadily as he could, Schrope pointed it in 6 different directions before holding it at arm's length, aimed at his own faceplate. He managed a nervous grin. Hope this one makes the cover of Newsweek, he said. Craig, Parry said, do me a favor and pan back to the entrance hole. Like this? The HUD box grayed into motion blur, then stabilized. Oh, wait. Svetlana saw it too. Unless there was some strange trick of the light caused by the chamber's optics, the hole in the wall had narrowed. It was, in fact, narrowing even further as they watched. Okay, we have a situation here, Parry said, with a calmness that was just a bit too insistent to be convincing. Craig, I want you to keep cool and get out of there. You still have time. Schrope said nothing. He clipped the cam back onto his suit and headed quickly back the way he had come in. The cam picked up, his hands reaching ahead, palming down against the wall for Gecko Flex traction. No good, Svetlana said under her breath. Hole's already too small for him to squeeze through. Schrope had seen it as well. He pushed back, his hands shaking. Too narrow, he said. The cam lingered on the closing entrance as the glass sphinctered down to a gap smaller than 50 centimeters across and kept on closing. There's no way I can get through. Stay where you are, Svetlana said, not caring how much it sounded like an order. This is not necessarily a problem. It's a problem to me. Now the refresh rate was even slower, with more and more of the image being filled in by software guesswork based on the previous frames. You must be in an airlock, she said. We should have expected something like this. It's good. It means they want to meet us. There's no way out now, Schrope said. His voice had gone metallic, stripped of harmonics. The imagery had stalled on the last full frame, refusing to update. The bitrate was barely enough to carry audio now. Craig, Svetlana said, if you can hear this, stay calm. Losing suit packets, Ashmari said. No visuals at our end, Parry reported. Craig, Svetlana said, talk to me. Tell me what's happening. His voice came through in short, breathless shards. I think the chamber's pressurizing. Pressure's counteracting my suit inflation. Gas is colorless. Maybe it's my imagination, but talk to me. Getting heavier in here. Suit's weighing me down. Can't stand up much longer. She heard another grunt and wheeze of effort, kneeling down. Still getting heavier. He broke off and sucked in a deep, labored breath. Breathing's getting tricky. Parry cut in. Craig, it looks like you're in a lock for gravity as well as atmosphere. I figured. You need to lie as flat as possible to ease the blood supply to your head. I'm trying. Can't get flat. Fucking backpacks in the way. Oh no, Svetlana said, remembering all the arguments they had gone over as to whether he should use a soft or hard suit. The soft suit had been considered less threatening, more obviously anthropomorphic, but the hard suit would have allowed him to lean back more easily, and it would have maintained normal suit pressure no matter what the external conditions. Bad call, bad, bad call. Still getting heavier. Pressure's pushed my suit all the way in. Seeing a lot of red lights on the chin board. Just hold on in there, Parry said. Sooner or later. But Svetlana heard the hopelessness in his voice. It was already too heavy in there for someone burdened with a suit. If the gravity and pressure increased much more, Schrope would soon slip into unconsciousness as the blood left his brain. Shortly afterwards, his heart would stop. Wait, she heard suddenly. Something happening. Glass is clearing. I can see through. I can see the other side. He made a wretched gurgling sound, every breath a universe of pain. It's them. They're here. Oh, God. They're here. They're outside. They're coming nearer.
A fevered urgency entered his voice. I gotta get the cam. Gotta get the cam.
Craig, never mind the damned cam,
Svetlana snapped.
You need to see this. You need to see this. You need to see this.
He's losing it, Ashmurray whispered.
Keep that shit together, Craig, Parry said.
I can see them, he said. They're funny.
Big. Bigger than I expected. They're like...
Audio broke up into static, reassembled in some scratchy, parodic approximation of human speech.
Mountains.
Then there was silence.
We screwed up with the suit, Svetlana said over and over again. We screwed up with the suit.
Murray helped her out of her own gear.
Don't cut yourself up about it. For all we know, it had 100 atmospheres in there. Speculation, Esh.
It was getting worse all the way until the end. Irrelevant anyway. The grav would have got him no matter what kind of suit he was wearing.
We shouldn't have let him into that chamber without securing the entrance point.
Parry grabbed her roughly by the elbow.
Secure it with what, Sveta?
He said angrily, frustrated by his inability to comfort her.
Do you honestly think anything we could have put there would have made a damned bit of difference once that door decided to close? Maybe it wouldn't have closed on him. Maybe it would have detected the obstruction and...
Too many maybes. He took her chin and gently steered her face to look at him eye to eye. Craig knew this was going to be a tough one. He went in there knowing the risks, knowing this was his one shot at redeeming himself. Well, he got what he wanted, and he got what we needed. Hard data on the inside of that thing we'd never have had otherwise. We owe him thanks. He came back and did something for us.
He saw them, she said.
Ryan Axford, who was sitting down at the underhole meeting table with a bulb of water before him, shook his head with tight-lipped regret.
I don't think he saw all that much, Sviera.
I'm sorry?
We already know he was having problems with trimix control. Coupled with the respiratory and circulatory stresses he'd have been experiencing, he rotated the bulb between his bird-like surgeon's fingers. Hallucinatory imagery wouldn't have been unexpected.
No, Svetlana said sharply. He saw something. He was clear about that. Beyond the glass, he said, coming closer.
I really wish I could believe that, Sviera, Axford said kindly. But all he saw was his brain being starved of blood.
He saw mountains, Lion. Since when do mountains have anything to do with seeing Jesus at the end of the tunnel?
Axford looked at her placidly. Since when do mountains have anything to do with aliens?
Craig saw something, she insisted. He saw something and sent us a message. He saw them, and he wasn't frightened. He sounded more mesmerized.
Or intoxicated. Axford shook his head again.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to take anything away from what he did for us. It was a brave thing to go inside.
But unless we recover that suit, we'll never know what he really saw. Suddenly deflated, unable to stand up even in the weak gravity of Underhole, Svetlana sank into the seat opposite Axford.
He was trying to get a cam onto it.
Hallucination doesn't preclude a rational response to that same hallucination.
Parry eased into the seat next to Svetlana and held her hand, massaging her fingers. They were always stiff after an EVA.
Ryan's got a point, he said softly. We both heard that little sermon Craig made before he went up the ramp. He was already on the edge before things turned bad.
He saw something, she said,
but now it sounded mechanical, her own defiance thin and unconvincing.
Denise Nadis pushed a drink and a foil-wrapped lunch in front of her, but Svetlana shook her head. There was an acrid taste in her mouth, and she had no appetite, no thirst.
We need to consider our next response, Parry said, when the silence between them had grown uncomfortable. If we took a hard suit, beefed up the comms.
Gravity would still get you, Murray said, examining Svetlana's helmet with a jeweler's squinting attentiveness.
Not if we pumped out the air and replaced it with an oxygenated solution.
Svetlana banged her unopened drinking bulb against the table.
Stop treating this like a fucking engineering problem, all right? A man just died in there. No one else is going back inside.
We can't just leave him there, Parry said, incredulous.
That's exactly what we're going to do. I don't give a fuck about any macho code of conduct horseshit.
She closed her eyes, lowered her voice to something like a normal speaking tone.
I'm not adding to the death toll just to retrieve a corpse.
We need his suit, Sveta, Parry said gently. His cam was logging to memory the whole while. If he did see anything, and you seem to think he did, it'll be stored in the suit. Get that back and we'll have our slideshow. We have no reason to believe his suit is still where he died. That ship's much bigger than the tiny part Craig saw. They could have taken him anywhere inside it by now. Now it was Nadis's turn to speak. But to do nothing. They killed one of us, Sveta. We screwed up, she said. Maybe they screwed up as well. Maybe they didn't realize we were so fucking easy to kill. That still doesn't mean we have to let them get away with it. So what are you proposing? That we smack them with an FAD just to make a point? We have to do something. We can't just sit here in a state of stalemate like it never happened. It took us 13 years to reach this point, Svetlana said, fighting to hold down her fury. Do you honestly think a few days are going to make any difference? They're getting restless in Crabtree. They want a response. I'll give them a fucking response. How does martial law sound? She grimaced, livid with herself. But it was out there now. She had said it. You sound like Bella sometimes, Nadis said, turning away. On her way back down to the surface of Janus, Svetlana had glued a webcam to the edge of the hole with a dab of Geckoflex, using her HUD window to point the cam at the alien ship. They had been concerned before not to invade the alien space with anything that might have been construed as intrusive or threatening technology. Now, given what had happened to Shrope, such consideration seemed less important. For several hours, nothing had happened. Then the software detected changes above its noise threshold and sent a flag to Svetlana's Flexi. She enlarged the cam window so that they could all crowd around and examine it. The symbols on the ship, fixed until now, were undergoing rapid cycles of change. It wasn't doing this before, Svetlana said. The Ofria Gombergs still had not come up with any correlations against their database of Janus symbol patterns, but the one thing they had confirmed was that the ship's symbols had been static ever since its arrival. Not now. It's as if it's agitated, Denise Nadis said. As if it's upset about what just happened. As if the Spakans know they did something wrong, and they want us to know how sorry they are. Or they're angry, Parry said, pissed off at us for sending Craig inside in the first place. Either way, it's a reaction, Svetlana said. That's more than we've had so far. You can't consider this progress, Parry said. I'm clutching at any straws I can find. At least now we know they noticed what just happened. At least we know it's provoked some kind of reaction. I was hoping we'd get through this without using the word provoked, Parry said. Nobody said anything after that. They just looked at the cam window, hypnotized by the storm of alien language, daring to dream that it indicated remorse rather than rage. Parry leaned against the doorframe. How you feeling, babe? Not quite as bad as I look. Have you spoken to Emily? Svetlana had been too tired, too frayed at the edges to call their daughter before her excursion to the alien ship. She had been afraid Emily would pick up on some of that. She's fine, Parry said. No one's told her about what's going on here, I hope. I think some of it filtered through, but not enough to worry her. It's all just big adult stuff going on over her head. Great being a kid, isn't it? Here we are screwing up first contact, and she's worried about the doll Wang promised her. We were all like that once. I wonder what happened to us. You should get some more sleep. Parry's own face was puffy with strain and fatigue. There's nothing happening here we can't deal with without you. That does great things for my pride. Wide awake now, she picked at a loose eyelash, gummed to her eye. Sorry. I know you're trying to help. Did anything happen while I was out? Nothing worth mentioning. No sign of any activity from the ship. Shall I fix you some breakfast, or are you going to try to catch a few more winks? So what's happened that isn't worth mentioning? After so many years together, Svetlana was familiar with all Parry's various distraction techniques. You won't like it, Parry said warily. I never like it. What happened? We heard from Bella. Word got out to her somehow. Svetlana growled her annoyance. She wasn't supposed to know about any of this. Crabtree already has the full story. It was only a matter of time before Bella got wind of it.
What did she want, anyway? To rub our noses in the mess we just created?
That's not the impression I got.
There you go. Always ready to jump in and defend her, Svetlana said with a spitefulness she knew Parry did not deserve. I take it that's a no on the breakfast front.
Svetlana pulled herself out of bed. She was still wearing the clothes she had gone to sleep in, now as wrinkled and musty as week-old laundry.
Give me a break, Parry. I'm doing my best here, and you do have a habit of defending her. Maybe because she's not always wrong.
It was said too placidly to have been intended as a goad. Svetlana gave him a poisonous look as she pushed her hair into shape, making the best of the sleep-matted mess. Bella heard about Craig, Parry went on, immune to the look. She wanted to talk to you about your next move.
Like I need her advice now.
She says it's very important that you talk to her. She pulled a fresh T-shirt from her overnight bag, one of her old ones, not one of the new garments from the forge vats. It was red, with a masked mermaid and the words Dive Chick in faded silver glitter. Animated fish that had once swum around the mermaid no longer did anything.
She would say that.
She also said it concerns Jim Chisholm. Svetlana paused with the T-shirt half on.
Say again?